Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
So, I am so happy to welcome you to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Snowden McFall, your host for Women Igniting Success. Our topic today is how smart women can overcome abuse. And our leading lady is Lakeisha Burton. Lakeisha is the assistant chief of the Jacksonville, Florida Sheriff's Office, and she is an extraordinary woman. You're going to learn so much from her. Welcome, Lakeisha.
Thank you, Snowden, for having me today.
Well, I am so pleased to have you here because you're such a role model. You speak all over the country about sexual abuse and domestic abuse, and you have a pretty outstanding background yourself. You have the honor of being the fourth African-American assistant chief of the sheriff's office in Florida. So tell us about that.
Well, it's being in law enforcement has been a lifelong dream of mine since I was a little girl. So I was very blessed just a year ago to be appointed to an assistant chief. And right now I am currently over our community engagement area of the agency. So our agency has been around over 200 years, so it's quite an achievement.
It is quite an achievement and something you should be proud of. And I see you everywhere. We met when you came on my television show, Igniting Success for Women. And I was so impressed with you and your story. I know you've just stepped down as executive director of the Police Athletic League. What is that?
The Police Athletic League is short for PAL. It's a national youth serving organization where it's really focused on building relationships between police and the youth in our community. And our local chapter in Jacksonville started about 47 years ago. And again, in 2015, I was the first woman to lead the organization, which was an honor because I was too a product of the organization at the age of 15.
Which is incredible. I mean, just incredible. So you so much to be proud of. But I think what will impress our listeners the most is your story because it's incredibly compelling. And unfortunately, all too many women are victims of sexual abuse. I can't tell you how many I meet. And it impacts them for the rest of their lives, and so many professional women, as well as victims of domestic violence. Can you tell us a little bit about your sexual abuse story? Because I know that that is extremely powerful.
Yes, I'd love to. And thank you for giving me the platform to do so. So I often share with people that, you know, at a young age, I was like any other normal child. I was energetic. I was excited about growing up. I knew exactly what I wanted to be in life. And my mom remarried when I was about 11 years old. And shortly after that, my stepfather, he raped me. So my life took a downward spiral out of control. I experienced depression, loneliness. I was broken, which later affected me and my self-esteem. And this is the quick version because I know we're on the radio, but I had such low self-esteem that I started looking for love in all the wrong places, and I became promiscuous. And I purposely got pregnant at the age of 14 in hopes that that this monster, if you will, would leave me alone. And I end up having my baby at 15 years old, and the abuse continues.
Okay, So I'm going to stop you for a sec because your story is so powerful. And so he started raping you at age 11, is that right?
Yes, 11 years old.
Okay, so it continued all those years, and then you became pregnant at 14?
Yes.
And then tell us what happened from there.
At 14, and again, I became a single mother at the age of 15, and the abuse continued until I finally made a decision to leave. And I called the police, and he was arrested. And shortly after that, he was dropped off. The charges were dropped due to technicalities or, you know. So anyways, he was out, and I couldn't go back home, so I kind of just, I was in survival mode. At the age of 15, I was a single mother out here and on the streets of Jacksonville, just really trying to find myself. And I tell people a lot of times there were a lot of people in my life that helped me, but I was so broken to the point I was burning bridges. So I was in a very dark place. I began to consume drugs and alcohol just to deaden the pain that I was feeling. And I resorted to stealing food and clothes just to care for my baby. And I can tell you something, Snowden, in 1992, I hit rock bottom, and I contemplated suicide because I felt like my life had no value. I hated myself, and I felt like, you know.
So let me stop you for a sec.
Okay.
I think what you said is so important, and I think that it's a critical piece because there are still, you know, professional women who have experienced the same thing, whether it was from a loved one or someone they know. And I know the incidence is much higher with people that they know.
Right.
And they carry around deep inside of them, if they haven't done the work, if they haven't done the therapy, if they haven't done the deep healing work, they carry around with them what you just said, that seed of self-hate,
mm-hmm.
and that seed of shame, which really
right.
is no fault of their own. They didn't
That's
do anything
right.
to attract this. They didn't do anything to make this happen.
Right.
But that seed of hate. And I know there's also one piece of your story that I think is really significant because it had an impact on the rest of your life. When the police came, what happened? There was a man there who made a difference, right?
Yes, definitely. Obviously, when you're young, you're taught, you know, if something happened, call 911, call the police. They're going to help you. So when I was awakened by the police officers that morning, and there was a male officer and a female officer, and I just remember them being at my room door, and the male officer kind of stood off to the side. And as soon as the female officer walked in, I was shocked because the first words that came out of her mouth was, "I was lying." And
that
shut me down.
She said to you that you were lying?
Yeah, that's what she told me. So, of course, I'm shocked. This is a police officer that's supposed to help me. And not only a police officer, but a female, a woman, who was, you know, judging me. So, but immediately the officer interjected and kind of moved her out the way. And I remember him gently kneeling down beside me, and he looked me in my eyes, and, you know, for the first time I heard somebody say, "Hey, I believe you." And
which is so powerful. I mean,
it was.
Right.
It was life-changing for me.
But
I did want to touch on what you said a minute ago about, as professionals, as women, as we get older, how we kind of, you know, hold this self-hate within us. And I think that speaks to the strength of women, how we're able to kind of navigate the challenges of life. And what happens is, like I did, I began to suppress all of those feelings and wear the different masks that I needed to wear at that particular time in my life. Like, I was a mother. I was a mother. I was a student athlete. So wherever you go, when you walk out your door, there, you have to accomplish, you know, whatever your goal is that day. And then to do that, you have to put on this mask. And I think that sometimes trauma creates this in you where you have to kind of hide and suppress it and wear these different masks.
Well,
and if you do it long enough, it becomes the norm.
That's exactly right. And often victims of sexual assault or sexual abuse end up almost being numb. And, you know, that's the way that they're relating to things in the world, because to feel means that they have to go back in and experience the feelings and the pain and the trauma and the fear from all that. So I apologize. I had interrupted your story. I know that you said that you were at this point in your life when you really hated yourself and you were on a downward spiral. You contemplated suicide. And I know that a lot of people who go through something like this do contemplate suicide. And what changed? How did your life change? How did you turn it around?
It changed. Honestly, for me, Snowden, literally, the day I had thought I was going to give it up and end my life, I was invited to a church revival. And I'm telling you, I felt like I had nothing else to lose. I said, you know, I'm going to go here and see, you know, because obviously I hear people talking about God, you know, I'm very spiritual. And I said, you know, I had my doubts if he was real, because I had been experiencing this trauma since 11 years old. But I can tell you, when I walked in there, I walked in that church a victim, and I walked out a victor, and my life had changed. And I was on the uprise.
So you had a deeply spiritual experience, and you shifted your whole perspective.
Absolutely. I did. Something magical happened to me that night in church. I remember the pastor had everybody praying, and I bowed my head and I said, you know, God, if you're real, show me a sign. And I heard this voice. He was like, what do you want? And I was shocked. And I just prayed that God would lift the burden off of me. And immediately the burden of all that hurt, guilt, and shame that I had been feeling for years had been released. And I know it was true, because I tell people I had been hurting for so long that when this happened, I had forgotten what it felt like to be or feel normal. And for that moment, I felt normal. And at that moment, I said, look, if I can hold on to this, I will help people for the rest of my life. And that's what I've been doing.
So that is wonderful. So tell us what happened in your life at that point. What everything turned around for you, right? Talk about what happened at school and your scholarship.
Yeah, so things were going well for me. The next year I was like the homecoming queen. I was the prom queen. So you know what that did for my self-esteem, because the year before that I felt like I was an ugly duckling, you know. So I was voted as a class president. I was student athlete of the year. And I even won a car here in Duval County from the school board, because I was a turnaround student of Jacksonville. So, but I was very blessed to be offered a basketball scholarship to play college basketball at the University of Central Florida. So I went off to college with my baby, mastered in criminal justice, and I graduated and ready to start my dream career in law enforcement in 1999. My dreams came true. I became a police officer. So by all accounts, I was living the life.
Which is so amazing. And then now we go, so you were able to completely turn your life around, become this stellar student, get a full scholarship, go off to school, and become a police officer, which is something you dreamed about all your life.
Right.
And then now we reach a point in your life where what we were talking about before, how if women don't heal 100% from their trauma, in some way, shape, or form, we create circumstances that make us a victim again. What was your experience at that point?
Right. So, you know, I think that, you know, we all want to do and live what feels good. So things were going good for me on the exterior, but I didn't have time to deal with internally how broken I was. I was just kind of on the bandwagon of all this good stuff happening for me. And to the point when I started the first 5 years of my career, I found myself in a domestic violence relationship, right back in that dark place that I was when I was a teen. So, and I think it's
so you were in a relationship while you're a police officer. You were a victim of domestic violence.
Yes, I was.
For 5 years. Okay. And did the police get involved in your situation?
Yes, over the 5 years, the police. I have five police reports that I was a victim of. So, yes, the police was called five times on five different occasions, but not by me. It was just from, you know, either my kids or a neighbor called out of fear.
Okay. And so how did you get out? How did you break free of that? Because more than one in three women and one in four men are victims of domestic violence.
Right.
So how did you break? 20 people per minute in the United States are currently victims of domestic violence. So how did you get out of it?
Right. So I really had a really an eye-opening experience. Obviously, I'm a police officer, so every day I would, you know, respond to calls of domestic violence. And I just remember this one particular day, I became so increasingly scared that I would be killed. So when I would respond to calls of domestic violence, I would be adamant and begging the victims to leave their abusers and to protect their kids. I would tell them about the resources that were available. But this particular day I went to work, I handled five domestic violence calls, and I was exhausted. So I woke up about 1 o'clock that morning, and I walked downstairs, and I turned on the lights in Snowden. I had all the families there in my house. I literally was losing my mind. I literally brought the victims and their kids all to my house because my thought was I wanted to protect them. So what I did, I arranged to have them all transported down to the state attorney's office. And, you know, I just sitting there, you know, getting them help, I started to, you know, think and talk to myself, you know, Keisha, you need to ask for help. And a lot of times because you're in this profession or you're, you know, people perceive you a certain way, it really scares you. You know, it's embarrassing. You know, I was dealing with so many different things. But in my heart, I wanted peace. I wanted to live, but I didn't know how to articulate it. So, and I finally asked for help. And that's what's life-changing. I just remembered what I did when I was 15 when I asked for help. And that's really the beginning. Acknowledging that, look, I'm in a position where I cannot control, I can't help myself, I need to ask for help. And that was a turning point.
Well, and that is such an important point because I think women in general, we're not great at asking for help on any level, whether it's professional help, getting the assistance we need, or overwhelm, or even in our relationships. But especially in a situation like this, this is such an important message that you're sharing. Asking for help and getting out of that environment and getting yourself on track makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So how'd you find your wonderful current husband?
Actually, I didn't. It was God. It was divine. You know, he was everything that I needed. Just our friendship, we started as just a friendship, and he really, you know, kind of walked through this journey with me. And I think that that's a lot of why I'm where I am today, because I really had somebody who was non-judgmental, who was going to be patient, who was in it for the long haul. Because I think it's important for people to understand that when you experience trauma, people that haven't experienced trauma, they're quick to like judge people. Why didn't she leave?
Yes.
Well, why don't she
right.
do this? And they don't understand that it's a continuous healing. So
right.
in terms of support, I think it's important that you have somebody that's going to be there for the long haul. So he understands the triggers. He understands, you know, when I'm not feeling good or what to do, not to do. And he understands that this is a continuous journey. So he's always been a police officer too. We just, our paths just crossed at the right time. And we're together forever.
Which is so wonderful. Well, and, I mean, you're so fortunate that you made it out of that situation alive. 40% of female homicides are by their intimate partners. So
yes.
it's a really scary thing. And I do want to, if anybody's listening today who's experiencing this and doesn't know what to do, there is a national domestic violence hotline at 1-800-799-7233. And that's ND as in dog, V as in vet, H as in happy.org. And so that's a really important thing for people to ask for help and to reach out, and you can call. There's also a National Child Abuse Hotline and a National Sexual Assault Hotline. So you can find all of these online and, you know, tap into your resources and ask for help. So you went from those experiences to now you speak and share about what has happened. How have you been able to ignite success? How do you stay positive? I know forgiveness is a key for you, right?
Yes, absolutely. Just forgiveness from, you know, those who have violated me from when I was a young person. I truly believe that I would not be able to have the life that I have that's very liberating and happy if I was was not forgiving those who had trespassed against me. So there is strength in forgiveness. And also I often tell people domestic violence is symbolic to having a tumor. It's like cancer. There are different stages of cancer. There are different stages of domestic violence. And if it goes untreated, it gets worse over time. And without intervention, it can be fatal. So I'm not the expert. I'm only an expert in my own personal experiences. And I've had a platform to, you know, help others through law enforcement, being a 20-year veteran. But the things I have seen in our community, it really really encourages me to continue to help and speak and advocate and bring awareness to people.
Right, and I know you speak a lot to children as well, and come across instances children come up to you afterwards and share their experiences, right?
Yes, definitely. Those are the most beautiful moments. I mean, I honestly can say every time I have, and Snowden, there was a time where I couldn't say a word, a mumbling word, without crying, without getting through this.
Sure.
So so I've just been growing. So, but it's amazing when somebody, and I think that's the power of your voice. You know, you never know who's listening. You never know who's going to be encouraged. You never know who needs that. Just to say, oh, she did it, I can do it. You know, I can take charge. I want to live. I want to survive. I want to take charge of my life. And sometimes it just takes hearing somebody else's story. So if my story can save and prevent someone from going down going in those shoes that I walked in, I want to take advantage of that and just share my story. And, you know, it's free.
Right. And it is. That's right. Well, and I think there's nothing more powerful than personal experience. I mean, I can't tell you how many people, as I travel the country and speak, and I talk a bit about having come from an alcoholic family where there was violence, and how many people come up to me at the end of the speech, and so many bright, successful women that you would never know have either experienced domestic violence or sexual assault or sexual abuse. I mean, we've seen certainly with the Me Too movement how common,
right,
unfortunately, all of this is. But I think the keys here are a couple that you mentioned. One is asking for help. I think that's so important, not keeping silent. The second is getting help. And I think, because I know that you've spent quite a bit of time in therapy, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, definitely.
And I think that that's a really big key, because if you don't get the therapy, if you don't get the support, if you don't work it through, you'll continually recreate instances where you're a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems to be the universe's way of saying, okay, you got to deal with this. And then the third thing I think that you said, which is so critical, is the power of your voice. And I know you had thought when you were a child, you had thought when this very first happened to you, you had thought you had screamed,
right?
But it wasn't verbal. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I often ask people, you know, have you ever been in a situation where you thought you said something but nothing came out? And I think it was fear. I know it was fear, and that silence silence my voice. So that's more of a reason why I'm adamant about speaking up. And also, if we don't use our voice to speak out, the people who have violated us, they get off, right? And I'm so I am very competitive, and I want to win. So every time I open up my mouth to speak against and out against what has been done to me, and that's what's been done to many people, victims in our country, our world, I feel like I'm winning. I want to win. So I would just encourage, you know, those who have experience, it's okay. We don't have to carry the shame and embarrassment of what was done to us. It's for those perpetrators to be embarrassed and ashamed. They did wrong. We didn't do anything wrong, so...
That's right. Well, and I think that that's a really important piece, too, because shame is one of those insidious things, and it creeps up, and it creeps up in terms of self-sabotage as women are moving up the ladder and they get more and more successful, and then the shame can come up, and they sabotage themselves because they haven't dealt with it.
So, Leticia,
just in case our listeners want to reach you after the show, how would you like them to contact you?
Ooh, I never thought about that. just really, I'm on Facebook, you know, pretty much on Facebook.
Yeah, that's probably the best.
Yeah.
And
or,
if you
know,
want to
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, they can just, you're really on Facebook. I'm on Facebook, or they can contact your show. You know, I'm happy to.
And you can always find my interview with Leticia on YouTube/ Snowden McFall. We're going to have that information here on Women Lead Radio. And I just want to thank you so much for all that you're doing. And, Leticia, you have been an incredible leading lady. Special thanks to all of our listeners, both in the United States and across the world. We're global now. We'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio show Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, and Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's been my sincere pleasure to be your host. We've heard some great suggestions and information about how to break free from the patterns of abuse, and hope that this will help you to continue to ignite your success.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.